the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Yes, hello folks, welcome to the original Beyond the Pitch. I'm your host Phil Brand, flying solo this week, no Martin. I'm absolutely delighted as always to be joined with the regular Danny Higginbotham on the show. So much to get through today, folks. Thanks, of course, always to the NBC Sports Podcast platform for hosting this. Danny, so much to get through. Like I said, I'm going to take a look back at the weekend. Big question marks being raised over Liverpool after their fantastic result against Arsenal prior to the international break, 4-0. They haven't won since then. They lost 5-0 to City, draw against Sevilla, draw against Burnley. Same old problems cropping up. We'll get into that. We'll talk about what has happened at Everton. It's not a 3-0 defeats on the bounce, or two 3-0 defeats and a 4-0 defeat. We'll get into that. We'll talk a bit about United as well, and how amazing Manchester City were once again this weekend. So, how's things, mate?
Yeah, I'm very good, thanks, mate. I haven't spoken for a while. How are yourself?
Yeah. Good, Dan. Been very, very busy. Got a lot going on. Another very busy week. We have Darren McCantney in the studio in a couple of days, so I'm looking forward to that. Peterborough owner, of course.
Yeah, so, be a good chap.
Yeah, looking forward to having him on the show this week. Looking forward to getting some insight as to what it's like to run a football club in the lower leagues. Let's start, mate, with Liverpool, because a lot of different people surrounding the football club, connected to the football club, quite critical of Jurgen Klopp. And I look back at some of our old shows and we talk about the pros and cons of Liverpool, and it seems like we're still saying the same things that they're good at and still saying the same things that they're bad at. Mm. They need a goalkeeper, we know. They need defenders, we know. Still, for me, lacking an out-and-out striker, a goal scorer. This is a Liverpool team, Danny, that are magnificent going forward, but in Didi Hamann's words, the most unbalanced Liverpool team he's ever seen.
Yeah, I understand where he's coming from that, as in terms of going forward, they look as though they're going to trouble anybody, but defensively, it is, you know, it is a problem. Jurgen Klopp has a style that he likes to play. Was successful with it at Dortmund, and you know he's brought it to Liverpool. And their biggest problem is, you know, if we look at all his defeats, I think in the league he's had since he came to the club, I think so 8th of October 2015, he's had I think 15 defeats in the league, and only two of them have been to, you know, your normal top six. So the problem isn't against the bigger clubs. Okay, we look at the Manchester City game, but to be honest with you, when they went down to 10 men. Obviously, you know, they were 1-0 down, but I thought they were the better team up until that point. The problem comes for Liverpool, and something, like you say, we've talked about a lot of times, the problem comes for Liverpool when they are the team that dominate the game, when they are the team that have the lion's share of the possession, because what they do, they only play with one out-and-out defensive midfielder. Both fullbacks will go forward at the same time. And they leave themselves unbelievably open to the counter-attack because they like to press high. Whereas when they play against the bigger clubs, the teams that are around them, you know, the top 16, the likes of City, United, Chelsea, Tottenham, Arsenal. Like I say, forget about the Manchester City game, because I do think that the sending off had a massive bearing on the game, even though they were 1-0 down. I just feel then that they're happy to sit back. They're happy to sit back and have, you know, 35, 40, 45% possession. And that way, it means that they're solid defensively. It means that the three men in midfield are happy to sit. And there's no real isolation. There's no real need for them to be done on the counter-attack. And that's where the biggest problem lies for them at the moment. And I think the one thing is, when you look at some of the managers in the Premier League, you can say the same about Arsenal and Arsene Wenger, that there's a certain type of player that they've missed and needed for a certain amount of seasons, and Liverpool are probably similar, and that's the big problem. But as for them going backwards as a football club compared to where they've been in previous seasons, I disagree with that, because you only have to look at results, you only have to look at finishes in the league. They would suggest that the club is not going backwards. They finished in the top four last season, which was the first time for I think, a few seasons. Klopp's first season, they finished eighth, runners-up in the Europa League, which was a 2015-16 season. And then they've then gone further forward. They finished fourth last season. And what people are forgetting to actually put into the conversation is that look at the teams around them. This last year was arguably, and this year is going to arguably be, the strongest Premier League team league in a long time. You've got Guardiola at Manchester City. You've got Mourinho at Manchester United getting them going. You've got Conte, who's hit the ground running at Chelsea, winning the Premier League title in the first season. You've got Pochettino getting better all the time at Tottenham. So, therefore, it's okay comparing Klopp's Liverpool to Rodgers' Liverpool, but the standard of the Premier League has risen since then. The standard of the players, the standard of the managers has risen. So, therefore, for me, Klopp is progressing nicely.
Danny.
Yes.
You can't win the Premier League without a top-class goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. I've never seen it done before. Problem number one. They've never addressed it. The club saying Karius. But that's it. You can't win the Premier League with that defence. Jamie Carragher said, I don't care who Liverpool sent defensively. Until they ditch their zonal marking, it will never solve any problems at the back four. You cannot win the Premier League neglecting the things that Jurgen Klopp's refusing to address. Fine. Look, as he said, I can't change what happens at Man United. I can't change what happens at Chelsea or at Man City. But he's not doing enough to address the weaknesses that Liverpool have that are costing them these games. Look, Sevilla, they dominate the game. They switch it off, 2-2. Burnley, they dominate the game. One mistake, goal. The weaknesses that are in the Liverpool team aren't being addressed. Did he really need an Oxlade-Chamberlain instead of a centre-half? They sold Sacco. They got 30 million for Sacco. You know, why aren't they bringing in central defenders and at least making an effort and trying to address this problem?
If they were to go out and buy a top-class centre-half and a top-class goalkeeper, in your opinion, could they challenge to win the Premier League?
Well, I would still say they're behind United and City, but I don't think you can give up, Danny. I don't think you can turn around and say there's no point in going out and doing this because United and City are too far ahead of Chelsea. I would say that that's a Liverpool team that wouldn't have drawn against Sevilla, that wouldn't have drawn against Burnley.
So therefore, what we're saying is that they're probably two players short. Possibly two players short of challenging for the Premier League.
I would say Spurs are better than Liverpool. Liverpool are not two players behind Spurs. Liverpool are probably the fourth best team in the Premier League. They're not two players behind Chelsea. They're not two players behind United. They're not two players behind City. I would say Liverpool, they need a top quality. Look, Tottenham, top world class goal scorer. Okay? Probably the best centre back pair in the league. Chelsea, world-class striker, they've got world-class goalkeeper, they've got class centre-half, same United, same City. Liverpool don't have any of those things, don't they?
So therefore then, why they've been mentioned in the same breath as them? Because I don't believe that they are challengers for the Premier League at the moment. I don't. So therefore, I don't put them in a Manchester City category. I don't put them in a Manchester United category. I don't put them in a Chelsea or a Tottenham, yet they finished in the top four last season.
Yeah.
So is there an argument to say that last season Klopp possibly overachieved? Because there is in my mind.
Probably. Also, he benefited from other clubs underachieving, notably Arsenal and United. Now, here's the thing, Danny. So Jurgen Klopp will be there 2 years in October. Okay.
Yeah.
Mourinho's there a year. United haven't conceded a goal at home since Celta Vigo in the Europa League semi-final.
Yeah.
Why is Mourinho making the progress that Klopp can't in half the time?
Well, I think, in my opinion, Jurgen Klopp is a fantastic manager. Would it be fair to say that, do you think Liverpool could go out and spend, how much did he spend on Pogba? Was it 75, 80 million pounds?
Yeah, but Danny, let's look at United's defence, okay?
Yeah.
David De Gea cost 17 million pounds, right? just under 20 million quid when they bought
it. But how long, yeah, but you have to put it in figures. If you were to buy David De Gea now, he would cost you up to 50 million pounds.
But what it cost for you to construct that defence, okay? You need to pay 32 million for Luke Shaw. Well, Liverpool just sold Sacco for that. 30 million, thereabouts. The centre backs, Rojo, was essentially 20 million plus Nani. Lindelof, 30 million. Kid doesn't play yet, to be fair. Bailly, 30 million. Right? Valencia is a right winger that was bought for 17 million. The year United sold Ronaldo and turned into a right back. In modern day, that's not a massively expensive defence, and it's none of those players financially are beyond the reach of Liverpool.
But those players that you just mentioned, most of the players that you've just mentioned there have been at United for a number of years. So you would not get you won't get Valencia for that price now. Absolutely no chance.
Okay.
Luke Shaw, if he was, if Manchester United were going to buy Luke Shaw now from Southampton, and he was the Luke Shaw at Southampton that, you know, that Manchester United bought, you wouldn't be getting him for £32 million either.
Okay.
Bailly, fantastic bit of business. I'll be the first one to say it. Lindelof, I hope it turns out right, but not first choice. Phil Jones, Chris Smalling, been there a number of years. So how much of an effect, as in terms of signings, how many of that back four did Mourinho sign?
Well, there's two arguments to this. He improved them. He took Marcus Rojo and somehow made him into a central defender. He signed Bailly, he signed Lindelof. Valencia is now one of the best right backs in the league. For United, so going forward. So every one of those defenders he improved. He took what he had, a poor, let's be honest, that back four, Smalling, Phil Jones, Luke Shaw, Valencia, that was not a top-class centre-back or back four defence. Mourinho's improved all of them, Danny. And for what he has improved in his defence with financially, with those players that he brought in, we're all within the reach of Liverpool financially. Liverpool are willing to pay up to $70 million for Naby Keita. So they were this summer. So those players are within the reach of Liverpool. And look, it's one thing if Jurgen Klopp turns around and says, look, the players I'm trying to buy, we can't get. Okay, fair enough. He's also said the solutions to Liverpool's defence don't lie in the transfer market. I can understand why he would say that, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Right, he's got to work with what he has. Has he? Could you say he's improved any of those defenders?
No, I wouldn't disagree with that. But let me ask you this question then. So we look at let's look at defensively. Manchester United and Chelsea, not so much Tottenham. Let's look at Manchester United and Chelsea, okay? Mm-hmm. Chelsea's team, you take Kante out of that team, or you take Bakayoko out, or you move Kante higher up the pitch, which they did against Burnley, conceded three goals. You look at Manchester United, would that back four be as safe and sound without Matic or without somebody sitting there?
No,
because
of course not.
The one thing that, and it's always going to be said, when a team concedes four goals, five goals, three goals, whatever it is, it's always the back four's fault. It's always the back four's fault. Now, this is something like, from my point of view, when I was playing as a defender, you always looked in for, all right, yeah, the back four gets the blame, it's the centre-half's fault. Well, hang on a second. Well, the question I would probably put, Not so much the back four. Do Liverpool have a Kante? Do Liverpool have a Matic? Do Liverpool have a Fernandinho? The answer to that would be no. And it goes back to the point that I'm saying, that your back four can be as you can have the best back four around. But that's why these defensive midfielders now are starting to go for more money. That's why fullbacks are going for more money, because they give the attacking option. Fullbacks are no longer defenders. Sure. Fullbacks are actually part of the forward side of the game now. So therefore, in my mind, and I go back to what I said about Liverpool previously, people go on continuously about the back four. The zonal marking, we've had this conversation before. I disagree with it completely. But when you're looking at it as a defensive unit, you now have to look at not just the defence, the two centre-backs in particular, you have to look at the defensive midfielders that are playing in front of them. Mm-hmm. Are they playing with one defensive midfielder? Now, if you look at Manchester United, when they, the way that they set up now, they will have the two centre backs, they'll have Matic screening them, and then more often than not, you'll have one full back will go and one full back will stay. So they're always defending with a four. Chelsea, they have the back three and they've got two very disciplined defensive midfielders, more often than not in Bakayoko and Kante. So they will defend with a five and attack with a five. Manchester City, whether it's a back three or a back four, usually when it is a back three, they have the three centre-backs and the one defensive midfielder. Arsenal haven't done it great, but I thought were absolutely magnificent yesterday. Mm-hmm. The three centre-backs and the two defensive midfielders. So they defend. They defended at times with a five. Liverpool defend with a three. Now, I don't care. Liverpool could have the two best centre-backs on this planet. But if you're going to play with two centre-halves and just one defensive midfielder, I don't care what centre-half you are going to get taken to the cleaners. Mm-hmm. Because in the Premier League now, we have some of the best centre-forwards in the world that bring all different strengths, whether it be the pace of Lukaku, whether it be the brains and the brawn and the movement of an Aguero. So people are always pointing the finger at Liverpool's two centre-backs. Yes, could they be better? Arguably, of course. If Liverpool want to win the Premier League title, yes, people will say that they need better centre-backs. I agree with that. But they also need and deserve better protection. So therefore, I'm not saying that there's an issue with Henderson. What I'm saying is that they are one man light.
Okay.
Because both full-backs go flying on and they leave themselves free defending. Whereas you should always, I always believe that when a team is attacking, you should always have a back four in place, whether that means two defensive midfielders that can drop into the full-back positions, whether it means two centre-backs, a full-back and a defensive midfielder that can go into the opposite full-back position, or a centre-half can go into the full-back position and defensive midfielder can. But more often than not, when Liverpool get caught on the counter-attack, they're outnumbered.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that for me is Liverpool's biggest problem.
All right, so whether Jordan Henderson or Emre Can plays that defensive midfield
yeah.
role, here's the thing, Danny. So what you've just turned around and said here is not only do Liverpool not have the players to compete with Man United, Chelsea, and City, tactically they're found wanting as well by playing three at the back and overcommitting going forward. They're brilliant to watch going forward. Look, Sadio Mane is superb. Brilliant player. Mo Salah has been a sensational centre. Brilliant
yes.
centre. Really like him. And if he can, that lad just brushes up on his finishing, you're talking about genuine world-class winger.
Mm-hmm.
They're great to watch going forward. So now the question becomes, Danny, what is success for Jurgen Klopp? Because if we turn around and say, look, he needs a miracle to win the league with Liverpool, is it fair to expect that from him? Is he in there to say, look, my job here is to keep Liverpool in the top four?
Yes.
That's
yeah. I would say so. I think you've got to look at it. Are they better than Man City? Are they better than Man United? We've already discussed this. They're not better than City. They're not better than United. They're not better than Chelsea. They're not better than Tottenham.
Danny.
So therefore, they overachieved last season.
United paid $35 million for Matic. These players are not massive.
That is one of the biggest mistakes that Chelsea have ever made.
Yeah.
One of the biggest mistakes.
It we'll get into United in a minute, but Man United with Matic is almost looking like you're watching a different football team. It's
yes.
genuinely incredible
mm-hmm.
how big Matic looks on the pitch and how often he's involved either defensively or the first line of the offense. We'll get
yeah.
into that in a minute. So anyway, so you would still say Liverpool progressing under Klopp?
Well, if you look at it, if you are going to compare, because everyone loves to do the comparison with the points that Rodgers has got and the points mm-hmm. that Klopp has got. For me, I think it's an absolutely pointless discussion.
Yeah, I agree with that.
A lot of the time that when Rodgers was there, he had one of the best centre forwards in the world in Suarez. He had
yes.
Steven Gerrard, who was still at his pomp for quite a while when he was there. He had Sterling. The teams around have actually improved. The managers around have improved.
Yeah.
So therefore, and this is the thing, Phil, it's like, and everybody does comparisons, manager this, manager that. No, if you're going to compare managers, then compare the teams that they're actually playing against. Compare
mm-hmm.
the quality of the teams they're playing against. The one thing I would say about Liverpool, and this is where I actually think that they get done quite a lot of times by the smaller clubs. If you look at Manchester United, not Manchester City, they have a completely different way of playing, but if you look at Manchester United, you look at Chelsea, and you look at Tottenham, one thing they have in them forward areas, is physical presence. They have a Kane, they have a Lukaku, they have a Morata, Now, that gives them that physical presence. So if you're playing against a Burnley, if you're playing against, let's just take, for example, last season, if you're playing against a Burnley, if you're playing against a Swansea, if you're playing against a Crystal Palace, if you're playing against Bournemouth, those are the main teams that they lost against, and Hull City as well. The one thing that you're going to do, and I know this from experience, from playing at a team that was scrapping away at the bottom, when you play against the bigger clubs, the biggest thing you are always told, be compact. Mm-hmm. Be compact as a back four, be compact and be deep. Because the last thing you want is these top players getting behind you. So what we would always say is, right, keep compact. If they're going anywhere, and if we're giving anything away, we're going to give the width of the pitch away. So teams will do that with Liverpool. They'll say, right, you're not going to go at us through the middle, because if the likes of Firmino, Coutinho, Salah, Mane, if any of them get on the ball through the middle of the pitch, we're in big trouble. So you give them the width. Now, give Manchester United the width, they're like, okay, we'll put the ball into the box for Lukaku. Chelsea, the width, will put in the ball for Morata. Tottenham, the width, will put in the ball for Harry Kane, as has been shown over this season already. That all three of them players have scored headed goals, I'm sure, without even looking. Liverpool cannot do that. So therefore, they have to play this intricate football where it's 1-2, 1-2s all the way around the midfield, go and get involved. Before they know it, everybody is near enough on the edge of the box of the opposition, because they're not using the width. They can't use the width because they haven't got that physical presence. So therefore, there is so much space in behind. So it's not just, it's a knock-on effect, but it isn't just the defence. I always believe you attack as a team and you defend as a team. Liverpool do attack as a team, but then defensively, centre-halves are getting absolute pelters from everywhere. So it's their fault. Well, hang on a second. Let's talk about the lack of protection that they have because of the way they're lined up and because they only play with one defensive midfielder and the two full-backs go bombing on. That's where the issue lies. It's a collective, not an individual situation. Mm.
Let's move over to Man City, Dan.
Yes.
Magnificent last three games. Liverpool maybe went down a 10-man against them. They still hit them for five. They hit Farnout for a 4 away. They hit Watford for 6 away. Look, I don't buy into this. It's only Watford. No,
they've had a great start to the season.
Going away and winning anywhere in the Premier League, Danny, and hitting the team for 6, and my God, City were breathtaking. Right.
They only conceded 3 goals before they played Manchester City.
Well, it's remarkable that United and City are sitting on exactly the same record, same goals, same goals against. Mm. City look breathtaking. They've got so many weapons that are coming at you. They've got so much variety. They've got so much quality. De Bruyne is sensational. They've been able to find a way of integrating Aguero and Gabby Jesus in the same team.
Yes.
Who both look incredible. How spoiled must you be to have both these players in your team? I mean, this is a fantastic City team, Donny, and they were brilliant against Watford.
That's another thing. Everybody goes on about their defence look shaky. Them and Manchester United conceded 2. They got the 2 best defensive records while still both scoring 16 goals. So you kind of disagree. Maybe Guardiola looks and thinks, okay, the best form of defence is attack. But the proof is in the pudding. They conceded 2 goals. But what he's done this season, Guardiola, first of all, listen, we've had this conversation before. I have to hold my hands up. I didn't think Aguero and Jesus could play together. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be very difficult. But the one thing I would say is that Aguero now is drifting into other areas. He is, in my mind, one of the best centre forwards in world football. Without question, he's got tens in all the newspapers in this country, in England, and rightly so from the weekend. But he's actually happy now to go into the wide areas. And you see that the relationship that him and Jesus have got, there's no real greediness about them. Against Liverpool, Aguero could have put the ball into near enough an empty net, laid it off to Jesus to get the goal. He could have taken the penalty to get his 4th goal of the weekend. He didn't. Sterling took it. So there's a real collective and togetherness there amongst them. But amongst all these players, we talk about Aguero, we talk about Jesus, we talk about David Silva, who is on another planet as well. De Bruyne, for me, he's been the
outstanding.
He's a dream to watch. Listen, I'm speaking as a pure neutral because, listen, Manchester United, they've been my team since I was a kid, and likewise with you, but you have to admire. Well, he's now crossed into the world-class category.
Completely.
De Bruyne. And you have to give credit to Guardiola because what he's done with De Bruyne, he's got Aguero, Jesus, David Silva, Sterling. Them four in particular were all on the front foot of the weekend So if you're a back four or a back three playing against them, you are on the back foot and you're dropping deeper and deeper. So what was happening then? De Bruyne was afforded that extra 2 seconds on the ball. Now, an extra 2 seconds on the ball for me means I can clear it further. Mm-hmm. An extra 2 seconds on the ball for De Bruyne means he can set up a goal. And he is just inspirational. But give credit to Guardiola as well, because he's managed to create a team that's so attack-minded whilst also creating extra time and space on the ball for De Bruyne. And they just look incredible. But the proof in the pudding for me won't be Manchester City winning the Premier League, because obviously that's going to be the intentions. It will be how far they go in the Champions League, because that's what the owners want. That's what all this money's been spent for. They've won the Premier League. The real test is going to be how far they go into the Champions League. And if they keep performing as they're performing now, then they could go all the way, because they are playing that well.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a couple of teams that are capable. Real Madrid, of course.
Yeah.
I like a look at PSG as well. I have questions whether PSG will get tested enough in the French League. But the variety, Danny, that they have, De Bruyne is just, he's got this wonderful prose about him. The way he runs with the ball, lifts his head, always picks his pass. When you watch this Man City team, they have your head spinning. The triangles that they play, the pass move, bump goal. And yeah, they got a couple of goals this weekend that were offside. You're on your luck in this game. They were just blistering to watch. Like, if you want to pick holes in Man City and really question, find something to question them on, for me, it's still they've shown they can win without Kompany against top teams. I don't know. Ederson, not sure about him yet. And again, we go back to what we were saying about Liverpool. Can you win the Premier League without a top-class goalkeeper? Whether he shows he's a top-class goalkeeper over the course of a season, I don't know. Look, I thought the injury against Liverpool, the kid's going to have, hopefully he doesn't have any psychological blocks, because I'm sure he's been warned before he came to England. It's tough. It's physical. It's so much more physical than Portugal. Here he is, his fourth game, he gets clattered. Right, sliced open on his face, and he's probably thinking in the back of his head, "My God, what have I come to?" So, he's gonna have to be strong, Danny.
I would reverse that, and I would say that obviously at the time it wasn't, and probably the pain he felt wasn't. But I think that's a blessing in disguise long term for him.
Yeah, maybe.
I really do, and because you cannot question him. He come off that pitch and he played in the Champions League, and then he played at the weekend as well against Watford, so he's had no ill effects.
Yeah.
So in the long term, that could have been. I always talk about De Gea when they played West Ham a few years ago. He went onto the pitch, a boy, and came off a man. He got absolutely battered by Andy Carroll, but kept coming back for more. And he walked off that pitch. He went onto that pitch, a boy, because that was always the question marks over De Gea. Is he that physical enough goalkeeper? He got battered. He come out of it. Not a problem at all. And he walked off that pitch, man. And I just think that Ederson, what happened to him at Liverpool, that could have been, I'm not saying he needed a turning point, because obviously he's maybe a little bit shaky, but there's a lot expected of Manchester City goalkeepers because of how high up the pitch the defenders play. But that could have been, you know, a blessing in disguise in the long run, because he's come back, he's not hidden from anything, he got straight back into the team, no problems, and he's cracked on with it. So, you know, maybe he is mentally very, very tough, regardless of what league he's come from.
All right, of course, let's talk about Manchester United. They went 4-0 against Everton this weekend. You just saw the scoreline, you'd think 4-0, that's impressive. United once again battering the team, but it wasn't like that. 1-0 for a long period in that game. United looked sluggish. Everton actually dominated possession in the game. I thought they gave Koeman a response to what he had seen. He obviously had a meet with him after the Atlanta game. I thought Everton played okay. I thought, like you said, the scoreline flattered United. It fell apart the last 10 minutes or so. The question mark going into this game, of course, was how would United handle Paul Pogba's absence? Again, the scoreline would suggest it was fine, but it wasn't fine for me. And I still have question marks about whether Mkhitaryan can really step up and give United that creativity in Pogba's absence. That is one area of the field that United are certainly inferior to City. They don't have the same weapons that City have. There's too much inconsistency in Martial, Mkhitaryan, Marcus Rashford, who's a sensational talent, but not the finished article yet. What did you make of United the weekend, Danny?
Well, first of all, they don't even have a lesser like-for-like player for Pogba. So when he comes out of the team, you know, all the players that, that you've just mentioned, not one of them can really play that Pogba role, that the driving runs from midfield to go and join in quickly with Lukaku, the presence that he has on the pitch. But the one of the weekend last season, that would have ended up a draw.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it did end up a draw, didn't it? So what Mourinho's got in there, okay, Everton missed a few chances, Wayne Rooney, you know, had a few chances, but there seems to be a certain amount of game management within Manchester United's team. Now, I think out of the 16 goals he's scored, 10 of them have been in the last 20 minutes. You might have to correct me on that, I'm not too sure, but I think that's actually
pretty
the case.
Close, yeah.
They've got a number of different goal scorers, and they're scoring goals from different parts of the pitch. So, yes, there is a little bit of a worry that at times they're probably not putting teams to bed, although, yes, the scoreline would suggest that they did against Everton. But they did have a little bit of luck in that middle third of the game, but then they went on and got the results. But the one thing I would say about the great Manchester United teams, people talk about Fergie time. People talk about Fergie time because the amount of goals that Manchester United scored late on to get points. I go all the way back to being 2-1 down against Sheffield Wednesday the first season they won the Premier League and came back and won 3-2, scored I think two goals in injury time. And they've done that on a number of occasions, and that's where Fergie time comes from. So Manchester United are a team now that I look at them at times and I think, oh, you know what, they could end up getting an equaliser. But if Everton had got an equaliser yesterday, I still would have fancied United to go on and win it. And that's the difference. Too much last season they were reliant on one individual, and that was Ibrahimovic. If he didn't score, a lot of the times nobody did. Whereas now look at it and think, okay, Lukaku is the main man, joint top goal scorer in the Premier League, but obviously Pogba's injured. But you've got Martial that can score goals, you've got Mkhitaryan, you know, he's got his goal as well. You've got goals now from all over the pitch, which is important for them. So I don't have as much fear that Manchester United are just going to win games 1-0. Because I just think they've got so much more attacking impetus about them. But yeah, I agree. Pogba is a huge miss. But you know, if you spend that amount of money on a player, he's going to be missed when he's not in the team because he brings something different to the rest of the players.
Yeah, I think when you look at Pogba, you know, look, Matic has been a big part of Pogba. I think Pogba really
huge.
Like
and Lukaku.
Yes, not for me. Lukaku and Mkhitaryan, because he's given Mkhitaryan freedom as well.
Yeah,
and everything starts going through Matic. Like we were saying earlier in the show, I've never seen a United team be completely transformed so much by just one player. I know we've United have had the likes of Cantona in the past that have been incredibly influential, but Matic completely changes this Manchester United team, and it's almost like this missing ingredient. And so the Lukaku, on a positive note for United, seems to have not been affected at all by the price tag, not been affected by the pressure of playing for Manchester United. But he did do something that was quite interesting at the weekend. He celebrated in front of the Everton fans. The Everton fans have been giving him pelters. He just hit a free kick. It bounced off the wall. The Everton fans give it the typical, yay. I tormented him a bit, taunted him. He scores, he celebrates. What's your take on players celebrating against their old club?
Good. I've honestly understood why you wouldn't, because people say, oh, well, you know what, I don't want to celebrate against them because they did so much for me and things like that. Well, hang on a second, what about your current employees?
Yeah.
What about the team that's just spent all the money? What about their fans? So, no, I disagree completely. Completely disagree. I remember it's a completely different situation, but I left Stoke and I scored against Stoke and I celebrated and I got absolutely battered and I was like, well, why should I be bothered? I never forget, and it was one of the worst things, and I should never have done it. But after the game we went over and saw the away fans, and
you know, I was at
Stoke at the time and went over and saw the away fans.
So wait a minute, you scored for Stoke or against Stoke?
I was playing for Stoke against Derby and I scored for Stoke. I scored a penalty. So after the game, I went to see our supporters, and as I'm walking off, there was this one fella, and honestly, there was a few thousand still left in the ground, and this is one fella, and he's just walking all the way along, like, so I'm walking down the pitch towards the tunnel at the halfway line, and he's following me, but like, on the side of the pitch, and he's calling me all the names under the sun. Yeah. You're this, you're that, you're piece of it, and what have you. And I was like, just laughing off and everything. And I turned round to him, just to like have a look at him. And His son could have been no older than four.
That's disgraceful, and
I let myself down because I went into the stand and I went up to him and I just went, "Do you know what you're doing to your son here?" Yeah. I said, "I may be right, I may be wrong for coming off to the pitch and coming into the stand, but I cannot accept this." I said, "You call me all the names that you want, but what are you doing for your kids?" And all of a sudden I saw a load of other Derby fans and I thought to myself, right, thankfully they're going to say something to him to tell him to shut up. They come for me as well.
Yeah.
So I completely lost it, waded into everybody. The stewards dragged me away and our players dragged me away and I got into the tunnel and into the dressing room and the lads were saying to me, "What were you doing?" I was like, I don't know. I just saw this young kid with his dad and I don't mind. You know, insult me all you want, but you've got a 4 or 5 year old kid with you. And I was embarrassed that I did that. But so, no, I just feel that when you leave a football club, what are they going to do? So, reverse it. So, if I have the penalty, and I miss the penalty, what are the fans? Are the fans going to clap? Don't worry about it, Daniel. They're just going to start laughing. So, no, I think that people say that it's disrespectful to if you score against your old club to not celebrate. Now, maybe to a certain extent, if you've been at a football club for 10, 12, 13 years, Frank Lampard, Steven Gerrard, John Terry, yes, I can understand that to a certain extent because the greatest years of their football career, 10, 12, whatever years, has been at that football club. So I understand that respect. But if you've been at a club for 4 years, 5 years, and then you go and score against them, so what? Because people will say it's been disrespectful to the team you used to play for. Well, hang on a second. It's been disrespectful to the team that you now play for, the team that pays your wages and the fans that come to watch you week in, week out. So celebrate all you want as far as I'm concerned.
Danny, if Wayne Rooney had a stuck one in the top corner, I would have expected him to celebrate. I would have expected him, whether he'd been eating it 13 years or not. And yes, there's a massive double standard. Fans want the right to abuse players, forgetting that they're human beings at the end of the day, shouting obscene abuse, as you say, with young children in earshot, which is just disgusting to me.
Yeah.
And then as soon as a player turns and says something, you know, "Oh, he needs to remember he's a role model, it's terrible, it's, he needs to be suspended." And it's like, you know, whenever I count on that, I remember John Barnes coming out and saying, "Every footballer that's ever played the game has wanted to do this at some point because the abuse that comes from the stands to players, you know, John Barnes had bananas thrown at him. Disgraceful.
Yes.
And every player at some point has wanted to do this because at the end of the day, Danny, you're a human being and the abuse that comes from the stands and the right that fans think they have to give you that abuse because they pay in and they're entitled for 90 minutes to treat you as subhuman is absolutely disgraceful. And so I have got no issue with it. I've got no issue with fans, but players celebrating a goal, and you know, that's I don't understand fans getting so sensitive over that. And so I remember when Paul Ince scored against United 3-3 Liverpool when United were 3-0 up, he jumped into the fans. He jumped into the, I think it was the cop.
Yeah.
And celebrated with them because he scored the equaliser.
Exactly.
It bothered me more that he scored the equaliser than him celebrating. Yeah. I expected him to do it.
Exactly. And you hit the nail on the head. If Wayne Rooney had scored yesterday, you would have... All right, he may have been a little bit mute, but he wouldn't have just walked away because he's an Everton player now. He doesn't play for Manchester United anymore, so therefore, why should it matter? Like you say, you know, if more often than not, former players will go to their old football clubs. There will be ones that will get cheered and clapped, but a lot of the time they'll just get booed. And so supporters pay their money and they have a right to say what they want to say to a certain extent. And they can give you abuse and things like that. But then don't complain. Don't complain if the player scores against you and then celebrates because, like you say, that's double standards.
What did you make of Rooney's performance? I thought he tired in the second half, didn't I?
I thought he did, but I thought there was glimpses of him where I thought to myself, do you know what I actually thought at times? I was sat down watching it with my dad, and it was funny because I was thinking it. My dad said it. My dad turned around to him and went, every time Wayne Rooney gets the ball, United look scared.
I think there's a respect there for him.
Yes, there was a respect because of the player that he is, but every time he got the ball, you could see Manchester United went on the back foot, and if it wasn't for De Gea, Rooney could actually have had 2 goals.
Yeah,
I don't think it was a bad performance for him. I think that Obviously, we know what's happened, sure, you know, off the field and things like that. But I think we're going to see, if, well, we'll get on to Everton in a minute, if Everton can sort themselves out, I think we'll see Rooney score a few goals this season, definitely.
They've had a bit of a rough week, Donny, since the international break. They lost or they were poor against Spurs last week. Spurs took them with the cleaners. I did not see the Atalanta game, so I don't know.
Me neither.
I've heard they were bad. You know, came in late into them over their first half performance. The game at the weekend, like we said, 4-0 flattered United a bit, but still they lost 4-0. Everton are sitting one off the bottom. It's not a league table that you can take much from at the minute, mm-hmm. but they'll not be happy with that, Danny. What's going on there?
Well, I saw them live. I did the game when they played Manchester City, and they gave a really good account of themselves. And they had a really good outlet. They had Calvert-Lewin playing up front, yeah. and he was assisted well by Rooney, and I think Tom Davies getting up to support him as well. The problem that Everton have, and I did say it at the time, 2 weeks before the transfer window shut, I said at the time that Everton have had one of the best transfer windows. But in order to make it a very good transfer window, they need to go and get a centre forward that is, listen, he's not going to be as good as Lukaku, but you need a player of that same type of quality, same types of strengths, which is to run in behind the opposition defence, to create space for the likes of Rooney, for Sigurdsson, for Klaassen when he's playing, to try and make things happen on the ball. Everton didn't get that. So we now look at Everton, we look at Koeman as a manager. One of his strongest points, he did it at Southampton, was always the fact that defensively, first and foremost, they were very, very strong. You know, they didn't concede a ridiculous amount last season. And yet we see them now conceded the joint most along with West Ham. Now, the biggest problem that I believe at the moment for Everton is that I'd probably say 95% of their players want to come towards the ball. So what happens is, if you look at Everton, if you look at the goals that they've conceded this season, a lot of goals that they've conceded this season is them actually losing possession in their own half, or a lot of the chances that they've actually given away is them losing the ball in their own half. When you don't have a centre-forward that's going to stretch the game, when you don't have a centre-forward that's going to run the channels, when you don't have a centre-forward that's big and physical and can hold the ball up for you, then you need to try and play your way out from the back. Now, if you're a defender playing against the Everton team and you see a lineup without a Calvert-Lewin in there, first thing you're going to say is, listen, let's press them high because there's no threat in behind. There's no threat of pacing behind. So all of a sudden, you've got an Everton team that are trying to play out from the back. You've got the opposition that are saying, tell you what, we're quite happy to have eight of our players in your half because we're not going to get countered. We're not going to get done by pace. So therefore, the defence is having to take risks that it doesn't want to take because just playing it long is pointless because there's nobody stretching the game. So therefore, they're trying to play out from the back. And it's very, very difficult because teams are pressing very high against them. And I think that's their biggest problem at the moment. Whereas if you put, I know he's gone, but if you put a Lukaku in that team, the Everton team would be, in my opinion, now probably in the top six. That is the difference that a goal scorer or a physical player or a player that can stretch the opposition can get in behind. That's what they can give you, and that's what Everton are missing.
Speaking of top six, I want to ask you before we go, Danny. Sitting in number four is Newcastle.
Yeah.
Rafa Benitez. Newcastle are going to have a hard job hanging on to Rafa. As soon as a top job comes available, there's going to be a lot of clubs going to be looking at Rafa saying, you know, he's done a brilliant job bringing them back up. They've won their last three, get frustrated over the transfer window, didn't get what he wanted. But he's had a great start with Newcastle.
Yeah, he has a fantastic start. I think you look at the start of the season. The key signing for me has been Hosseler, the centre-forward that's come from Stoke. He's a focal point for them. Defensively, you know, they've been all right. They've only conceded four goals.
Lascelles looks
yes. like a good bad guy. I was with him towards the end of my career at Nottingham Forest when he was coming through as a young lad, and he wanted to learn, wanted to listen. An old head on young shoulders. I've seen him a few times when he's been doing, you know, he's been playing for Newcastle, and I've passed him in the tunnel when I've been working on the games, and you know, he's grown into a leader there. But I just think Hosseler gives him that something a little bit different, you know. So as we've spoken about Everton, it means that Newcastle, they can go that little bit longer. And then when you've got players like your likes of Perez, your likes of Atsu, and your likes of Richie in particular, who can deliver an unbelievable ball into the box. Hosolu, if he had his shooting boots on, could have had a hat-trick at the weekend. So I think he's made a big difference in terms of the way that Newcastle play. And when they got promoted, I said that I fancied them to finish in the top eight. Now, that was obviously before the transfer window, because I did expect them to bring more players in. But there's no reason in January, if they're in a decent position, it's all about Mike Ashley, whether he's going to give Benitez the money. Because when I look at Newcastle and I look at Benitez, if Benitez was to leave that football club would self-implode. The fans would be absolutely fuming. I had the pleasure of speaking to Benitez when they were in the Championship, and I asked him, I said to him, I said, listen, I said, what made you stay at Newcastle when you could have left when they got relegated? And he said to me, for 90 minutes in the last game of the season when they beat Tottenham either 4 or 5-0 or 5-1, whatever it was, they didn't stop singing his name for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
90 minutes. And he said, that was enough for me to go, right, okay, I've got a fantastic football club. Newcastle, if they're given if they can spend the money, the size of that football club should be a team that is challenging for the top six. Now, my only fear at Newcastle is that Newcastle's a football club need Benitez more than Benitez need Newcastle.
Right.
And that's always a problem. That's always a problem when a manager finds himself in that position. Because if Benitez were to leave Newcastle tomorrow, well, he'd go and get another top job, because he, in my opinion, he is that good. So it's up to Newcastle. They've got to try and keep him happy. I think Carr, who was at the football club, he was the one that was having a lot to do with the signs and things like that. He left, and then I thought, so, okay, well, this is going to be all about Rafa Benitez now and his players and his team. But there was a frustration for him in the transfer window. There was a frustration for him in the January transfer window as well when they're in the Championship. So Newcastle can't allow that to happen too much more. Like I say, they lose a manager like Benitez, they won't get a manager as good as him next time.
Completely, completely agree, mate. We'll go ahead and leave it there. Danny, as always, mate, it's a pleasure.
Pleasure's mine, mate.
Thank you so much, mate. We will catch up with you again next week. Enjoy your week, Dan. Thanks
to all
of you
who
download this. Thanks, folks. All the best. Bye.